Welcome back to another former player interview on Red Tinted Glasses. And Callum, today we're delighted to be joined by a former Aberdeen Academy graduate as well.
Yep, great news. Moving up in the world. That's the fourth former player interview now. We're flying.
Yep, so Jack Grimmer, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for making time. It's a busy schedule for you down south. Games coming pretty thick and fast, so I appreciate you giving up some time to speak to us today.
No, it's all right. Thanks for having me. As you said, the games are, I think with the whole COVID and the pandemic, it's knocked everything back. So I think we've got Saturday, Tuesday games for the majority of the season, which is the way I like it because I don't like training. I prefer playing. So it suits me fine. But yeah, like you say, I've not even noticed we're in a lockdown because there's nothing to do and we're playing every second day anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's a busy schedule.
Must be fine for you having that distraction anyway. Mm. But like we said, you know, you came through Aberdeen's academy, but just take us back to kind of growing up in Aberdeen, playing football in the city. And, you know, you were at Dyce Boys Club, if I'm correct in saying.
Yeah, I was. So I just played sort of my school football and things and just with your friends and that. And then signed for Dyce Boys Club around about 11, 12 years old, I think it was. And then, it was Dyce and Albion at the time. I'm not sure what it is now, but I know Dyce still do very well. And it was Dyce and Albion at the time. And those were, it's such good days when you're younger, you know, football just has a different meaning to when you're a professional. And I played obviously up front and which got me seen by Aberdeen. And I think I was about 14. I went in and signed and, you know, met Neil Simpson, which for me at the time was just this mind-blowing thing that he was, you know, the coach, and I think he overseen the youth development, and it was a real, just the start of what would be, you know, one hell of a journey, I think, and such fond memories of things like the Galway Cup when we were younger, and playing Rangers was always a big thing when we were younger as well. Mm-hmm. It was such a nice thing to do, and yeah, just that was the sort of start of my journey that, you know, eventually led to me luckily making my debut against Rangers at Ibrox.
Mm-hmm. What's it like sort of playing, obviously, with Neil Simpson as the head of youth development, obviously a young player coming through, he's a club legend. What's that sort of like with him to look up to for advice and that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's like you said, a club legend. And I don't think you, especially at that age, I think you don't realise just how much of a legend he is until I've got a lot of older family friends through my mum and things, and you realise like the way they speak about him, just how big an influence he is at the club, and to have his expertise, you know, overlooking your games and things, and it just always made me want to run faster, run more, tackle harder, and you know, really sort of impress him as much as you can. And even now, when I still bump into him, it's nice to say hello and catch up, and you're obviously not doing that as much now given the situation, but when you bump into him, it's nice to see him and catch up about old times.
Mm-hmm. It was a pretty good group that as well, around the time coming through at the youth ranks at the club, so yourself, Fraser Fivey and a few others. That must be a pretty decent team to play in.
I think it's class, to be honest. I mean, that's why I'm a Clove Rangers fan as well, because you know, Jordan Brown, Mitch Megginson, and Jamie Masson, everyone, Fivey, of course. And it was a really good group, and it really gave me something to focus on and something to drive towards, because they were obviously older than I was. And I think I found that you had Ryan Jack, and then you had sort of Fraser Fivey that chased Ryan Jack. And then for me, it was about chasing Fraser Fivey and trying to, you know, anything he did or the way he was seen and try and emulate that. And although we've all sort of had very different career paths, it was starting out together at Aberdeen is, you know, some of the memories you have from putting up goals and carrying goalposts and things. It's great times. Yeah, it really is.
And you said you signed for the club as a striker from Dyce. What prompted you then to drop back into right back, which is where you are now?
Yeah, I think probably the lack of goals. I think, you know, it was just brought up as a sort of willing, hard-working runner. And I was big for my size, which at that level was huge. And then I think I made my debut up front, and then I sort of converted to a winger. and then just sort of moved back into right back. And it was always a position I felt comfortable with because you got to do the attacking side of the game, but you weren't necessarily relied on for goals and assists, which, mm-hmm. you know, I think is not my, I'll halfway say it's not the strongest part of my game, but it's something that I've then felt comfortable with. And I think coming on to the play was something I preferred rather than, you know, having your back to goal or especially being wide in the touchline. So it's just something that, and then when I moved down to Fulham, that sort of accelerated a lot more, and it was a position that I sort of made my own, and even dabbled at centre back quite a few times. So it's, mm-hmm. I think it is good, and any young player I'd say that's coming up is to try different positions, because in main football, as long as you're playing, it doesn't matter which position it is, you know, as long as you're getting that shirt every week is the most important thing.
Definitely. And what about, you know, when you were in the youth team, obviously you didn't have Cormac Park, so what was that like then, playing at Balgownie and the different pitches that came with that?
Yeah, it was it's funny, like, it's because obviously just till recently they still, I think, drove to either the barracks or to mm-hmm. Balgownie or wherever it was, and it was something that, it was nice. It was a nice connection. Now it's totally different because they'll be at Cormac Park, and I've never been there, obviously. But it was a nice connection. Still thinking, oh yeah, like I remember doing that when I was there, mm-hmm. and it was. It was just different getting the minibuses and loading up the minibuses, and that was. And I think that's the biggest difference. I think I remember when I came to England, is that the young players never really had many jobs, mm-hmm. and whereas I was brought up with, you know, cleaning boots and doing kit and cleaning the boot room and cleaning the changing rooms. And I think it instills a sort of discipline and, you know, from a young age. And mm-hmm. I think that's probably why you see young players coming through in England and they don't have that. And it's clear to see that they don't have that. And I think that's always something that I was almost grateful for, that I had Neil mm-hmm. Cooper shouting at me if I didn't clean the boot room enough, or, you know, you had players shouting at you if you hadn't cleaned their boots properly. And it was a nice upbringing. It really was. And I think, especially when you see academies nowadays, like, you know, some players join us on loan and they've got soft cores and you can tell at a mile off. And I think that's something that, whether it's been Scottish or not, I just don't think you're born that way or you're raised mm-hmm. that way.
Yeah, definitely. And who are the players you would clean the boots for?
I remember I used to clean Charlie Mulgrews, and he asked to borrow my, I always remember he asked to borrow one of my pairs of boots, and then he scored 3-3. And, and it's safe to say I never seen that pair of boots again. He then kept on the rest of the season, and I always remember he scored a belt of a free kick. And yeah, it was just, it was like Chris Maguire was another one that I cleaned. And which I'll never forgive myself for. No, I'm joking. He's all right. But it's one of those things that I always think that now, when you're growing up, it also helps you build a relationship with first team players, mm-hmm. which is the most important thing. And like I say, I don't miss the boot cleaning days when players didn't think they were soft enough or anything. Like, it was just horrible.
Sort of almost like old school apprenticeships that they used to have down the road as well, which obviously they don't have now. So good to see that it's still happening up here, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. It is. And even things like, I remember you used to wait for your Christmas bonus if you did a good job all year, things like that. And I just think those little, I just hope those things don't go out the game, because, you know, the way life's going, things like that are going out the game.
Yeah.
And I just think the way it instills that sort of discipline early on, because you're lucky enough to be playing football as it is. I mean, if you have to sweep a changing room, it's not the end of the world. But down in England, it's safe to say it just doesn't seem that way at all.
You know, you said when you were kind of growing up in the academy, the Rangers games were something that you looked forward to. You made your Aberdeen debut at Ibrox, age 16 years old. Just what was that like, the build up to that week? Did you know that you were going to be involved, like traveling down and be involved in the first team squad that day?
Yeah, I think I'd been very fortunate. Mark McGee, who was a manager at the time, had sort of taken me down on a couple of away trips. He took me to Parkhead, actually, but I was only 15 at the time. And on the bus down, he came up the back of the bus and was like, "Oh, I'm really sorry, I found out that you have to be 16 to play in the Premier League. And I was like, oh, brilliant. Like, what am I doing here? And I already, to be fair, I already knew, but I just thought it's nice that I'm still coming along. And, you know, I'd happily just make the boys coffee if I still get to come on the bus. Like, and it was one of those things. I think the team were going through quite a tough period. And as they were during those years, I feel like it was a completely different time, I think, to come when I was there compared to what it is now. And, you know, I think he'd brought me on, and I think it was a nice almost. I found I was happy. I made my debut. I was buzzing. But looking back, it was maybe a good deflection for him, you know, giving young players a chance. And you'd, it then kind of, the headlines were about me making my debut and not necessarily a 3-1 loss at Ibrox, which for a manager's point of view is pretty switched on. And I've seen managers do it numerous times since. But yeah, it was a really special moment. I still remember warming up and just getting, you know, the tin foil that you get your pies in, just getting that like thrown at you. And I thought, this is proper men's football. Like looking down, like it was, I remember thinking, I watched the game back like a couple of weeks after and I couldn't remember. I was like, I didn't remember that. And it's amazing. You don't remember anything because your adrenaline must just be through the roof. And, but I feel very fortunate. It's especially because it was against Rangers. And like you said, I grew up loving playing Rangers, just wanting to kick somebody as hard as I could. And it was, it's all special memories for sure.
And did your family manage to get down for the game? I know obviously that they go to a lot of games for you now, even down in England, but were they able to be there for your debut?
Yeah, they were. My mum and my sister got down to the game actually, which I was very chuffed about because obviously there's no guarantees that you would play. And if I remember, it was a midweek game, a Wednesday maybe at night. And so there's no guarantees that you're playing. And I remember when he signaled me up to come on, I was like, holy shit, this is it. I was like, this is the moment. This is it. So, but no, it was, it's always special when your family can see you play after, you know, I wouldn't even play football today if it wasn't for my mum. So I think it's always special when you can share those moments for sure.
Yeah, because you still see your sister's support now on social media when it comes up to big games.
She's all over it, isn't she?
Yeah. So we know how, and as well, like we'll come on to it later on in the episode. But you know, when you won promotion with Wickham, you see how much it meant to you and your family. You FaceTiming them from the Wembley pitch. So you know, it is quite evident how supportive they are of you in your career.
Yeah. I think they definitely want to be as supportive as they can, and I think that's sort of heightened by being up in Scotland and me being down here. And you know, I think they probably would rather I played in Scotland so that they could actually go to games and they could see me. And I think it's no more evident than during the pandemic. You can't actually see them at all. And I think that's why these moments sort of mean more, because they just wish they could be there, and they you know, they know the journey and the loneliness and everything else that goes with it. So it's really special. And like I said, the FaceTime was about as close as you could get on the Wembley pitch, which was a nice, which was a change, but it was a nice one. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you said, you know, the nerves were really like there at your debut at Ibrox, but how did that compare a week later when you made your home debut?
Yeah, I think it wasn't as daunting, because you didn't have 48,000 Glaswegians screaming at you wanting to kill you. But it was more of a, I remember feeling just buzzing because it was Pittodrie. It was like, you know, where I'd wanted to make my debut. I didn't want to make it at Ibrox or Parkhead. I wanted to make my debut at Pittodrie. But you know, I'll take my debut wherever that is as long as I get one. But it was more just a buzzing feeling. And just, I remember going on just thinking, run around and just, if you get a chance, if you get a half chance, just pull the trigger and hope for the best. And unfortunately, I don't think the game went our way either. And I think that one was more buzzing. But I remember when I made my home debut and I started against St Mirren. And that was like, I remember the Craig Brown, it was, told me I was starting and my stomach literally fell out. Like I was so nervous. It was unbelievable. I can't even explain the feeling. And, but yeah, it was just one of those surreal moments that, you know, I'd got the start that I'd wanted for the club that I'd supported since however long. And it was a special moment that I look back on. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
If it does make you feel any better, me and Glenn have both made appearances at Pataudry. Glenn at half-time, and he messed that up, trying to score. And yeah. I played in a cup final, yeah. got smacked 3-0 with the school. So, you know, it happens to the best of us, you know.
Happens yeah. to us all then, that's fine. Yeah, exactly. That's comforting, yeah.
Yeah, mine was a half-time challenge, and I was supposed to try and beat the keeper, but my mate still don't let me live it down because I practically just chipped it into his hands. It was a pretty good pass back almost.
At least you had the bottle to try chip them. I mean, yeah, there's not many people that would try that, actually.
Yeah. But that game, obviously, you know, looking back at, you made four appearances and only in one of them did we end up winning the game. But despite the game not going well in your home debut, I was saying to Callum earlier before we were recording this that my recollection was when you came off in that game, there was people, you know, around me and around the stands, you know, giving you kind of a standing ovation and applauding the effort you put in. And I think it's quite evident that, you know, fans appreciate the effort that young players put in and like to see young players, you know, develop. And I think for you as well, like, that must have been nice if you even remember that or got it to come off.
I do. I remember, honestly, barely being able to walk after coming off because I was that tired. And I remember thinking, how do players get through 90 minutes? Like, honestly. And because, like you said, you had no sort of game management. You thought, don't make that run because you can make the next one. And you had no management of your body. It was literally just run as fast and as hard as you can all the time. And I think, like you said, I do remember the atmosphere. And it was, I think, just the sign that fans see a player that was born and brought up an Aberdonian and given everything, and whether that's good or bad on the ball, he gave his everything. And I think that's sadly probably something that's going out the game nowadays, is it's, and that's why I like playing at Wickham as much as I do, because I think that's, the gaffer always says, that's the baseline. You know, if you give everything, doesn't really matter what happens with the ball, because I'll be happy because you gave everything. And it was a special moment. You know, I didn't like the fact that I got subbed, but to get even like an applause, even when we were losing, was still a nice moment. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then sort of after those four appearances in Aberdeen, move to Fulham came about. How did that all come about to start with? And other than not having to train at Balgownie, what was sort of the appeal of Fulham in particular?
I did miss the buses and I missed loading the kit. And I still remember when I came in and the fridge was empty, and I filled the water in the first team fridge in the changing room. And I think Conso said, oh, the fridge is empty. And I was like, oh, I'm going. I was like, I'm leaving. And obviously I was buzzing. I was thinking, I don't have to fill the fridge anymore. Like, it was a weird one, because we'd actually played in the Galway Cup. And we'd played against Fulham, I think, and they'd brought up data and things like that about how they'd watched me since that, and I was 14, 15 at the time. And, you know, showing sort of that in depth, and you see comments and that, it was never a thing about going down and playing in their first team. I knew that. I mean, they were a Premier League team, and you know, I couldn't even get in the Aberdeen team at the time. And it was a sort of analysis and in depth, and they flew up and they showed me all these things and that. And as an 18-year-old, 17-year-old, I was like, wow, like, you've actually watched me for this length of time. You actually know like what my game's about and things like that. And it was just a challenge, I thought. For the main reason for me was because people thought that I should have stayed and played. And I always say, but I wasn't playing. I wasn't getting the opportunity. I'd made my debut, and then by the time I was 18, I'd only played four times.
Yeah.
And for me, you're not even sure if this chance is going to come up again. You know for sure this chance is probably not going to come up again. And for me, like all players kind of think, it's, you know, too big an opportunity to pass up. And I had other interest as well from Wolves and Stoke at the time, who I felt sort of, it's different now, but back then they kind of suited my footballing culture and upbringing a bit better, the way their first teams played. It's different nowadays, but whereas Fulham were this free-flowing passing side, and, you know, had foreign players left, right and centre and things. But it was just the sort of in-depth analysis, and this Malcolm Elias was a scout that I still keep in touch with, that he came up and I'd seen him at Balgownie, and I had no idea who he was, and he came up and, you know, spoke to me with my agent at the time, and it was a big thing moving away at that age is such a big thing. Although you feel like you're an adult, you're an absolute child, and living away was the biggest thing that made me grow up quick. And it was such an interesting opportunity that I just felt like, you know, I wasn't going to be able to pass up.
Yeah, I think, like you said, it's these sort of opportunities don't come up often for footballers, and it's kind of do I or don't I? One thing, you know, you look at Ryan Fraser when he went to Bournemouth, he got a lot of abuse. You know, he'd just broken into the Aberdeen team. Okay, like, unlike you, was kind of playing a bit more regularly. But I noticed, like, you were quoted as saying that you also received, like, some kind of abuse as well, personal as well. And one thing you said was, you know, I'm going to go and prove people wrong that this move is what is best for me. And I think it's safe to say, you know, you've developed a decent career for yourself down in England. So it's probably safe to say that you have proved those doubters wrong. But just what was it like dealing with the abuse at that young age, you know?
Oh, like, it was, especially because I find that it was at an age that, you know, we weren't really accustomed to social media like we are now. And I think people just used and abused, they still do, but they did a lot back then as well. And I think it hurt more because, you know, you get abuse off of, say, a Rangers fan or anything, it doesn't matter. But if it's an Aberdeen fan and you're from Aberdeen, it cut me deeper than other abuse did. And I think it was such a big thing at the time. And it obviously didn't help, probably, you know, Ryan Fraser, like you said, left, then Fraser Fivey left, and then there was a few players then left after me, and you all kind of get grouped together, and it just shows you there's no real right answer, because, you know, Ryzy's career to my career to Fivey's career to Ryan Jack's career to Scott Wright's career to Scott McKenna's career, like, everyone's careers is just so different. And I think you just have to make the choice with the cards that you're dealt, and if it works, it works. And I think I'm glad that, if anything, I made a life for myself down here. It's now 8 years I've been down here, and as much as, you know, the homesickness maybe would have taken me back up the road, I managed to stay down, and now my fiance lives down with me, who's from Hazelhead, and you know, both of us have made a life down here for ourselves. And it's not to say we're not looking forward to hopefully getting back, you know, that's for damn certain, because you do miss it. You miss seeing your friends, your family, and the game in general. So, but yeah, it's always an interesting story, sort of thinking back to, you know, I wouldn't even call it that abuse, because it wasn't bad abuse, but because it was from your own fans, or what I felt like with my own fans, it was always going to hurt more, I think.
Yeah, probably not like levels of abuse that Scott Wright's currently facing anyway.
Yeah, like that's the thing. That's what's going to happen when you sign for Rangers. I don't care what anyone says. That's just, I think anyone knows that if you sign for Rangers, that's what you're in for. And I think as long as you know that and you go into it with your eyes open, then that's, you know, you can expect that and take that as it is.
Definitely.
Moving away slightly from the negative aspect of the Fulham move with the abuse and things, a very good Fulham side, played 17 times for them. How did they help develop your game, do you feel?
Yeah, it was really interesting, because, you know, they sort of, I was down there at such a young age, and they helped me off the pitch just as much as they did on the pitch. You know, they gave us like cooking classes and, you know, butler classes, even to even things like ironing. And I think they realized they had a cluster of kids that hadn't lived on their own and, you know, probably wanted to get up to all sorts, and because they're in London for the first time living on their own. And they kind of, you know, had a good cluster of players that with a good work ethic that they've kind of shaped and molded. And I think that was sort of how, you know, me coming from Aberdeen, I already had that, but I think a few foreign players didn't have that when they arrived, and they had that when they left. And I think that's something they've managed to take with them. But, you know, it's a club that I met so many good people. You realise just behind the scenes how many people can make a club tick. It was the same at Aberdeen, actually, but I was kind of young that I didn't really, you know, get to meet everyone at that level. But it's a club that I hold highly. I've still got friends there, weirdly enough, in football. Mm-hmm. There's still some players that play there now. And it's always nice to see them doing well because, you know, it's a club that I hold in very high regard and, you know, one that I want to see doing well.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing I was asked by one of my friends, Chris Robertson, he wanted to know from you what it was like going, you know, dropping down the divisions to then kind of develop your own game. And we look at that when you were at Fulham, you went on loan to both Port Vale and Shrewsbury. So was that your choice to go out on loan to these clubs?
Yeah, I think it's always, you know, the club kind of want you to stay and play 23 games in times, and because I think they invest highly in their youth and want to have the best youth, whereas the best thing for a youth player is to go out and get games no matter what level that's at. And you know, I went through large chunks of not playing, and then I went on loan to Port Vale and did really well, and then they recall you and you're not involved, and then they've just kind of scuppered a loan that was going well, and I was kind of too young to kind of kick up a fuss and say anything. And I think, you know, sometimes they don't have the best, the player's interest at heart, but that's football. And you've got to do kind of what's best for yourself at times. And like you said there, I went to Shrewsbury on loan, and it was actually with Mickey Mellon that he sort of was my first real sort of connection with a good football manager that really took me under his arm. And sort of gave me the tools that I needed to play my best stuff, because he's very much like that. He's a great man manager that, you know, likes his players being together and things like that. And it's and it definitely sort of gave me the confidence that I still carry with me today, because he was like almost like a father figure. You just wanted to do well for him as much as you could. And even speaking to Sparky McNulty, I think he's still the same just now. You know, he's very loves to get his players together and things and get them fighting for the badge. And that's why I hope they go on to do well this season.
Yeah, I think he's a bit misunderstood maybe by Dundee United fans just now. Obviously, they can't get into the games and the results aren't going the way they were hoping for appointing him.
Yeah, I know. It's always tough because I think they have just been promoted, but it's important to try to keep that momentum going. But when you lose, I think, Robbie Nielsen and that, there's going to be a change, and it's, you know, you've got a new manager with new ideas, and if that didn't suit last season's ideas, which got you so much success, then there's obviously going to be people that disagree with it. But I just hope he's given time, because in football, you never get time. You never get, well, like normally you don't ever get time, but it's, so I just hope he gets that time to kind of get his, and he's got a great team there. Like Sparky, I'm sure he'll start scoring goals. And if he doesn't, then, you know, there must be something wrong there. Because I honestly thought Aberdeen were going to be interested in him, especially now, given that they've just sold Cosgrove. But, but yeah, like I said, he's got a great team there. And I just hope that he, you know, gets the results that he deserves.
Yeah, and, you know, Shrewsbury must hold some fond memories for you. Over 50 appearances there. And you liked an FA Cup goal at your time at Shrewsbury as well. The winner against Sheffield Wednesday must be a high memory for you there.
It is, yeah. It was my sort of first taste into like a proper like cup game, of like a proper cup upset, and to score the winner was just unbelievable, as you can imagine. And it's still something. I got a throwback. I think it happened last month actually, and I got a throwback about it. And every year you watch it and you're like, yes, like that was such a good day. Because in football, there's so many lows compared to highs. So when the highs come around, you have to savour them. And I've been fortunate enough, I've actually had quite a few, more than most, I think, which, you know, I do feel very fortunate though, because you see just how many lows there are in general. So it's, it gave us Man United in the next round, and I was so looking forward to the game, because I'm a Man United fan as well, and it is the least I've enjoyed a game of football in my entire career. Like, when I say we didn't touch the ball for 90 minutes, it was built up as this massive occasion. I think we'd played Chelsea the season before, Jose Mourinho's Chelsea. and we'd run them close, actually. It was 1-1 with 5 minutes to go, and Willian scored in the last 5 minutes. And that was a great game because it was a close encounter. Man United turned up, popped the ball, and it was just, I think they needed a result, and they came and did a very professional job. And it was a very humbling experience, seeing the levels that you need to get to.
Did you find yourself starstruck in that game at all, or do you kind of put that to one side?
I think I've always kind of taken the stance that, like, I look at them and I think, like, just get into them as much as you can, because then they can embarrass you if you don't. And I think it's, and you have to kind of, if you step off them and give them that extra yard, or, you know, the extra few seconds, then they just knock it around you. And it's, I think it is sort of a, as you're warming up, you know, soak it in, soak in the atmosphere. But as soon as the game starts, you've got a job to do. And whether that's against Man United or Accrington Stanley, it's still going to be the same result. So,
yeah.
But it's all experiences, and it is. It's one of the huge pluses I find of the FA Cup is that, and the League Cup, of course, but the FA Cup is definitely something that I love playing in, because it just gives you that magic and there's a certain feel to it.
And then sort of after that loan spell, you ended up with Coventry following you, leaving Fulham. I think fair to say they probably made a bit of a tough time off the pitch, but on the pitch, some great times, a huge club. How did you find that sort of experience?
Yeah, it was a really, really great experience. It was, I remember still, I was in the summer, and it was the first time I'd sort of been out of contract between leaving Fulham, and I signed for Coventry in July. And I was just running in West Hill. I was actually training with West Dyke in West Hill. Shout out to West Dyke.
They'll be disappointed to miss out on your signature then.
yeah. And yeah, my mate was like, do you fancy it? Like, and I remember like training with them. And it was nice that they let me come and train and stay fit. And I was speaking to different clubs and nothing kind of felt right. I just needed somewhere where I was going to feel content and happy and play. And then I went down to speak to, I think, Southend. And then on the way back up, spoke to Coventry just at a chance. And the minute I spoke to the manager and things, I thought, yeah, like this is it. Even though I wasn't happy to drop down a league, I knew sort of just how big a club they were, and you know, I'd watched them in their, they played a cup final the season before, and they'd had 40,000 fans to Wembley, and immediately when I signed for them, I realised just how big a club they were. The pressure to win every single game was immense, and I remember early in the season we lost to Yeovil Town, and we'd been on a good run, and it was one of those games, it was a horrible game, and they had three shots on target, scored three goals, and the fans were trying to get into the changing room after the game. And I remember thinking, yeah, I was like, this is what you signed up for, this is the pressure you need to deal with, and you, like, we all kind of looked around and said, this is, that's not going to stop, so this in here needs to change, and we really stood up to it that season, and the playoffs is really the best way to, I mean, if you offer me to win the league, I'd obviously want to win the league, but the playoffs is such a special way to get promoted, because it's after such a long season and it's such a build-up to one game. The thought of starting the next season in the same league to do it all again, or to get that jump. And yeah, I was gutted that it ended the way it did, because I didn't play much the second season, but it was still I've got really fond memories of my time there for sure.
It's not just the playoff, but it was also the FA Cup. You popped up there with a winner against Stoke as well.
I know.
You and that competition have got a good affair.
I honestly don't know what it is about the FA Cup, but like, I think, because even when we were playing Tottenham just there, all my mates were like, you're going to score. And I'm like, I've scored one goal in like 3 years. Like, I'm not going to score.
It's not stopping Becky Christie putting money on you every week,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah. She sent me that actually, and said one day it's going to pay off.
So yeah.
It's not going to be any day soon. Like, no. It's I'm saving my goals for when I come back to Aberdeen. That's
sure. Oh, that's fine.
Yeah. But no, it was. It was a really sort of, and you know, even when I played at Port Vale and Stoke are sort of arch enemies, and even all the Port Vale fans loved that I got Mark Hughes' sack and that night, and it was around about my birthday, my family were down, and it made for just such a another high, which I'm very grateful for. Looking back over my career, these are the moments that I'll value. And then going on from that to, it was just a whirlwind of a season, because to go from that to then up to Wembley and then score at Wembley was just a feeling that, you know, you'll never get over.
Yeah, you lead nicely into my next question. Thanks for that. Yeah. You made yourself into the PFA Team of the Year that year as well. But like you said, scoring at Wembley, and it wasn't a bad goal at all, Jack. You know, finding top bins just about. But your family as well there to see it. Just what was that whole day like? Because safe to say, I think Exeter were probably seen as the favourites for that game.
Yeah, I think they'd been there the year before. In the same position, the playoff final, and lost to, I want to say, Clark Robertson's Blackpool, actually, if I remember rightly. And I remember that, like, we kind of instantly thought, if we score, they're going to fold, because they're going to think, not again. And that was the kind of talk at halftime. But the morning of the game, I'd never experienced anything like it. I mean, you know, your family's texting, everyone's texting, like, I should just switch my phone off next time, but everyone's messaging, and, you know, my mates, and, you know, pictures, they flew down and then flew up again the next day and things like that. And it's just, you know, everyone's sort of watching, and pre-match meal, you can't eat a single thing. Like, you're trying to force down toast and you just don't feel like eating. I've never had anything like it before. And I remember the day, it was like 33 degrees, London stuffy heat. The aircon on the bus on the way to the game was broken, and so we were all like shirts open, sweating on the bus. Not the best prep by any means, but I just felt that it was going to be our day, and I was so confident that we were going to win that game, and I've never been more confident of winning a game of football. I definitely wasn't that confident with Wickham when we beat Oxford, but it was so interesting. I was just so confident we'd win that game, and I think everyone was. And I think when you have that, I mean, for the first goal, our centre-back takes a touch and whips it into the top corner, and you think, yeah, it's going to be our day. Mm-hmm. And I remember when after I scored the third goal, I thought, right, this is 3-0, the game's won, like, soak it in, like, take it in as much as you can. And I remember I walked to the side to pick up the ball for a throw-in, and there was a guy sitting in an Aberdeen kit in the Exeter end. And I looked up and I was like, Mona Dons. And it was one of those things I always remember. I still see, I watched it back the other day, and you can see the Aberdeen kit in the stand. And it's just such a special day. And like you said, scoring was just, with my family there, was just like a feeling that you cannot describe, that's for sure. Mm-hmm.
And I suppose, you know, your successful time at Coventry then led to you joining Wickham, which you're still at now. What made you join Wickham?
Yeah, it was kind of a weird one, because it was obviously the next time I found myself out of contract, which is a horrible situation, as you can imagine. You just tell yourself that everyone's going to forget about you. Like, it's horrible. And I'd met with a few clubs. I'd met with Hibs actually as well. And I was so surprised with how that went down, because, you know, I met with him and he was so impressive and so sort of talking me through clips and, you know, talking me through this and that. And it was really, really like impressive. And I thought, yeah, like, if I don't sign for you guys, you're going to win the Scottish Cup or something this season. Like, it's just, that's the way it's going to go. And I met with a couple of teams in England, and I just felt like I just needed the right fit for me personally. And like, my fiance was based in London at the time, and I thought, whatever happens, I just want to be happy and playing games of football. And I remember Gareth Ainsworth rang me, and I just had that feeling. I played against him a few times, and I've always kind of got the feeling, I was like, that's a manager I'd want to play for. I just, the whole rock and roller look, he just looks like he does him, like, he just looks an interesting character. And I remember when he phoned me, and my fiance Sammy was making breakfast, and I just thought, I came through and I was like, that's it. I was like, I think this is it. Like, this is going to be the one. So I went and trained for a week, and it happened nicely. It happened very smoothly. Just signed a deal and that we were all happy with, and played games. And God, I could have never imagined how that season was going to go, but that's the fortune and the luck sometimes you get, I think, when, you know, because by no means was it say, financially the best package. By no means was it the biggest club. It was personally what felt right for me. And I think that's what Wickham is. I think it can't compete with many teams on financial basis or the training ground or the stadium, or it's that sort of feel-good family factor. And I think it's why players sign for us. And that's I think, what inevitably led to us doing so well last season, was because we were like a family all fighting for each other. And what a season it turned out to be.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the terrace end at Adams Park there, kind of old school ground, still holding on to that as well. Obviously, I know it's shared with Wasps as well, the rugby team.
Yeah, they've talked about sort of doing it up, and I think the fans are kind of adamant that it's not happening, because I think they like this sort, and it is nice. It's sort of the old terrace, the concrete terrace, and you know, when it's full and when we score, they're all sprinting over each other to get down, and it's that proper old school football, and I think if football clubs are so quick to get the best of everything, it's actually a nice sort of mainstay for us. Shooting into that end in the second half is they've almost, that's probably what we've missed this season, is we've not been there to suck the ball in the net. You know, it's just been with no fans. It's a horrible thing. So, but yeah, no, it's nice. It's a real sort of family run club as well, and it's I feel fortunate actually to play through this period of the club's history for sure.
Yeah, and do you think it would have been weird if you had signed for Hibs playing against Aberdeen? Mm.
Yeah, it was a weird one, because I just sort of, I think the biggest pull for me personally was family and friends. I think since I was like 17 years old, I hadn't been near them. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, I kept thinking, oh my God, I'll be 2 hours away from my family, 2 hours away from friends. Like what I thought that is. Like friends can come to my games. Like I can, you know, I can go to theirs after a Saturday game. Like I don't need 3 days off to go home. I can just go home. And for me, that was probably the biggest pull. And the club were just so, like, you made you feel wanted, which was a really nice thing. I've got good connections actually with people in the club, and you know, their head of recruitment, such a good guy, and it was things like that really sort of, you know, the fact that it was green and not red was kind of covered over a little for a short while, but it would have been weird. It really would have been. You know, I think even watching the games nowadays, you know, pulling on that shirt instead of the Aberdeen one would have been weird, but you know, who knows what's going to happen in the future. It's always, I think everyone knows I'm still very fond of my hometown club, as any hometown boy should be. But yeah, it's just one of those things. In the future, you never say never, but as long as it's not blue, it's fine.
Yes, take note, Scott Wright. But how, you know, you said it was a special season signing for Wickham last season. Just how good a job has Gareth Ainsworth done with the group of players, obviously, that you're a part of? And how did that compare to winning promotion with Coventry? Did you say it was a better promotion? Or is it hard, hard to say?
I think I remember at Coventry during the promotion season, every time you won, you were relieved. You were never buzzing. You were just like, oh, okay, that's another one done. Like, move on. Whereas Wickham, like, we kind of, every time I'd come home after winning, Samway would be like, one again, like, you're still top of the table. I'm like, oh, yeah, we're not even halfway yet, you know, let's just, we'll see what happens. And then we got to Christmas and we were 7 points clear, and she was like, you keep saying you're not halfway, but you are halfway now and you're 7 points clear. And it became a point. Unfortunately, I picked up a like a groin injury, which was an awkward one because it's to do with my pelvis, and so I didn't play from November until the playoffs. So I was actually glad the season got cut short, because I was missing out on it all that time. But it hit a point that we obviously did sort of, we were just kind of ticking along nicely and no pressure, and then it hits a point that you think, well, you are halfway, you've been top most of the season, you need to hold on to this. And I think that's a tough pressure to play with. I mean, you know, big teams and big leagues play with that all the time, and I think, you know, maybe the break came for us at quite a nice time. You know, looking back on the way the form was, and you know, we were missing key players going into the next few games, and I think the pandemic gave us the chance just to reboot, and everyone came back fit and flying, and and ready for the playoffs. And I think we were still massive underdogs going into the playoffs. And the team talk, you said there about the credit that Gareth Ainsworth deserves. I mean, the team talks that he gave us before the first leg of the Fleetwood game and the final, like, I'll never, like, honestly, like, I wasn't sure if I was ready to cry or run through a brick wall. Like, I swear, it was just something I'd never experienced before. You know, he, especially the final, he sort of switched off the, dimmed the lights, and he told us all to just picture, went through our captain at the time, who's still our club captain, Matt Bloomfield, had been at the club for 15 years, and he's Wickham, like, through and through, 500-600 appearances, and he told us to all close our eyes and just picture, you know, Bloom's lifting the trophy and what it would mean to him and what it would mean to his family and what it would, and I think Bloom's actually got up and went to the toilet, probably shedding a tear after it. That's how deep it got. And I think after that, I think with that image in our heads, we went out and I thought, we have to win. Like, we have to win. I don't care if we play horrendous, but we have to win. And yeah, someone was smiling down on us that night for sure. And the feeling at full time when you know you've done it is just something I can't describe. And for that reason, I think it's a more special promotion than Coventry, because that was expected. You had to get promotion, no matter how you did it, you had to do it. Whereas with Wickham, it was so out of the blue, it was unbelievable, and it's a real fantasy story for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of sort of Wickham, I can imagine you'll probably be expecting this question to come at some stage. Adebayo Akinfenwa.
Yeah.
That man's like a celebrity. He's got like the notoriety of like a Premier League player. That must be just crazy being him. I'm going against him in training as well as like Piezu as well. What's that like?
I mean, Uche as well. Like, I mean, the last game, they both played up front at one stage, and I was like, imagine being their defender. But I think Bayo is, you know, people say it all the time, oh, he's one of a kind, he's, you know, no one else like him. But genuinely, as you can imagine, there is no one else like him. And I think his stature, yes, obviously his physique and things, but his character is like no one I've ever met. He's, you know, larger than life, and he's never shy of putting his opinion across on anything and everything, which you can imagine. And having someone in that change room, I think it shows this season that he had a knee injury through the off season, and he'd missed the sort of first eight games, I think, and we lost the first eight or seven games of this season. Mm-hmm. And he came back in, and not only did he come back in and sort of play bits, but he was in and around the changing room, in and around the team. And for me, it showed how much work I should put into off the field stuff, and who I'm talking to and what I'm saying and how I'm saying it and how you get the best out of people, and you know, how people feed off my energy, because Christ, like, we feed off his energy every day. And it is, he's someone that I actually feel very fortunate to have played with. And even when we played Tottenham, like, it was unbelievable. We played Tottenham, and two Tottenham players, Bergwijn and Sanchez, came down to our changing room and asked for his shirt. And so here's us begging to get their shirts, and he had to actually print off more shirts in the club shop to give to the Tottenham players. And I thought, I actually did say to him, I was like, I'm so glad I'm playing with you, because who else am I going to play with that the Tottenham players are going to, you know, want your shirt over anyone else's? And it was, for me, it shows the sort of level he's at, not just on the football pitch, but in, you know, Instagram and social media and that kind of status as a footballer. It's, I mean, only the day after we get beat 7-2, he posts an ad about Old El Paso fajitas. And I thought, if that was anyone else, I'd be walking into training going, what are you playing at? But because it's him, that's just what he's like. And, you know, no one says anything about it. And rightly so, because I think at his age, he's done enough in the game to get to that level.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want to argue with him either, anyway, to be honest.
No, you don't want to go there at all, that's for sure. Because he then entices you in to try the gym session with him, which is just miles off it. So between him and Ikpeazu, I think we've got the two biggest strike partnership probably in the whole of world football at the moment.
Another off the field question I've got to ask. Tom Grennan, I love that man. I've got a CD in the car. I've seen him live twice. What's all that about? How did your friendship sort of come about? And just what's he like? I've got to ask.
Yeah, it's so I remember once a couple of years ago, actually, during the promotion season at Coventry, my mate gave us tickets to his gig because me and Sammy were fans and things, and he gave us tickets. And I posted on Instagram of just being there, and his manager, a guy called John Dawkins, who's a massive Cov fan, and when I say massive, he's right up there with world football fans. He's a huge Cov fan, and he sort of messaged me and said, "Oh, are you here? Like, do you want to come backstage and just meet Tom and meet me and like have a chat and things and just about the season?" So he was great. He, you know, he took us back up and to like the after party kind of thing. I was there sipping my water, like, because I think we had a game in 2 or 3 days' time, And yeah, it was a surreal thing, you know. It was just nice to just chat to someone that clearly cared about the club, and then obviously Grennan comes in, and you know, he's just such a nice, down to earth lad. Like, he's just a bloke. Like, you know, he's class. He's even with the sort of the fame that he's got and the fame I've no doubt that he's going to achieve. You know, with them all, I just want to see them all doing well. Because they're very much like that, you know. They like seeing you do well, and vice versa. And and it's a funny one. It is. It's just one of those weird things. And now, yeah, I just hope he goes on to get sort of as big as I know he can be, because he's an interesting character, and he's a Luton Town fan, which I don't like too much. But I think his second team was Coventry, and that's all that matters, I guess.
It's definitely encouraging to hear what he's like off the pitch. And I've seen him twice at Transmit, and you can see notice the difference between the first one, time he formed, to the next one, and the size of crowds. So I've got no doubt that he'll probably go on to much bigger things, maybe even headline it one day. I hope so, because I just love the man as well. So that's good to hear.
Exactly. I think it's just about just time, and I think the pandemic definitely hasn't helped, because he had a tour and things like that on, and I think they're getting quite close with Jerry Cinnamon as well. You know, I always see them sort of palling about and stuff like that. And you know, I think Jerry, you can see how big he is in Scotland and how popular he is. So I think Grennan's, yeah, definitely. And they're very people actually, because like my sister and her partner went to see them in Inverness, and I kind of had mentioned to Dawkins, oh, you know, my sister's going to be there, and so they invited them onto the tour bus after then, had a drink with them and stuff like that. Nice. And you know, they never had to do that. It's just that's the way they are, and it's they're great. They're a great bunch of folk, and that's why you want them to do so well. And like you said, they are hopefully, you know, one day's headline and Transmit, and we can all get tickets and go.
And you won't be having to sip water when you're putting out the next one.
Exactly. Yeah. Hopefully not. No.
I do remember seeing it posted on social media. I was thinking, like, I don't know how that friendship sparked up, but it's just the most bizarre thing ever.
Well, it's funny, that was the question that Callum said when I said, you know, we're getting to interview Jack Grimm. He says, "That's great. I'll ask him how he's friends with Tom Grennan."
It is. It's so random. It is really random. But that's just, yeah. I think I've noticed down in England, especially, like, it's definitely the same in Scotland. Like, players switch all the time. You know him. Who knows him? Who knows him? And and I think off the field as well, that's definitely a thing. You know, I know Dawkins and Grennan, who know someone, who know someone, and it's an interesting thing. And so I'll definitely get into some tickets for you for the next one. See, yes. Well, whenever we get visiting, whenever you can tour again or whatever, you know, it'll be good.
Loving that. I'll ask you about football now. We'll go back to that. Life in the Championship with Wickham. It must be weird playing in front of no fans compared to what you're used to, obviously. How are you finding that? And also, it must be weird playing against Spurs as well without any fans.
I remember for the playoffs was our first taste of no fans. And because there was so much at stake, it didn't matter. It was just one of those things you got on with, and as long as you won the games, then it didn't really matter. But I think going into this season, I think obviously I want to stay up just in general, and I don't want to go back and get relegated, but I think even more so because there's no fans, and I think you're probably looking at fans for next season, and it would just be weird if, you know, the club's season in the Championship, there was no fans and they never got to experience it with us. And it was good. It was okay at the start, but now, I'll be honest, it's like, you know, it's just horrendous. Like, it really, I can't honestly describe how horrendous it is. And I think, especially for a team like us that, you know, we play off adrenaline and we play like we wear our heart on our sleeve, and it's, to feed off that energy is just, it's not there. And I think we got 2,000 fans against Stoke early in the season, and we walked out to a standing ovation because obviously it was the first time they'd seen us since the promotion. And like, we all got shivers. Like, it was such a nice feeling. And I think for them as much as us, because, you know, they're obviously getting to see the team that they want to support. And I think when now we literally can't do anything, I think football's got to be that sort of out for people. And I think we were hopeful of getting fans back in at the turn of the year, but obviously that completely went to pot. And you know, only God knows when fans will get back in now. I've absolutely no idea. It's probably going to be next season, if that. So it just shows you, you know, football's football. And but it genuinely is. It's such a cliche saying, but without fans, it's actually nothing. It's just 22 people kicking a ball about a pitch. And I think that's been proven by this pandemic for sure.
I think it is interesting to hear you say, like, it started off feeling okay, and then now it's terrible, now that you're used to it playing in front of no fans. Because that's how, I think, I speak for Glenn as well, how we feel as fans. When we first got football back, we were like, oh yes, brilliant. At least we get to watch it. We get to watch Aberdeen play or whoever. And it was a bit of normality back. But now, sitting at home watching is so dull in comparison. But it's interesting to see, like, here it's the same.
Yeah, you can literally just hear, like, players shouting and, like, you know, like, managers shouting. And it's just, there's no atmosphere. And it's just, it's painful. It really is. And I think another, that reminds me about another Gareth Ainsworth masterclass, was that, you know, he, in the playoffs, he touched obviously on the fact there was going to be no fans, and he said about our subs, you know, our subs and the players that weren't involved, like, can you be our fans? And every tackle, every header, every pass, every shot, they were cheering as if we had fans, and they were nearly singing. Like, that's how much it was. And that first game, we won 4-1, and it's little things like that that I don't think you realise how important they are until you look back and you think that made a difference, you know. And it's, and that, but obviously you can't do that for 46 league games, like, you know, because players are going to be angry, they're not playing, they're not going to sit there and cheer. But yeah, it's honest. And even like my family and friends, like, you know, they were like, oh, we'll get down to a game, and oh, we'll see you play, and, you know, can't wait to come down. And it's just like, you almost feel like you're going through it alone, because no one's at the games with you, and the fans are at such a distance watching it on TV. It's horrendous. Yeah, it's just not the same at all.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, actually, about what Gareth Ainsworth said to your subs, because that reminds me of when I was watching Scotland in the playoffs for the Euros, the Israeli subs, you could hear them on TV singing and chanting as well. It's funny. I just thought, it's very quirky.
It is. And honestly, I remember, like, at halftime, the gaffer touched on it to keep it up for the second half, and he said that he, you know, he's seen the Fleetwood bench looking, going, like, what are they doing? Like, why? And he's like, we've got them. Like, we've got them rattled, and that's it. And obviously, we ended up winning 6-2 or 6-3 on aggregate. I can't remember. And that was, you know, one of the pieces of the jigsaw that fit together so well.
And then, sorry, Callum, so you were saying there about, like, the Spurs players asking for Akinfenwa's shirt. Did you ask for anybody's shirt from that Spurs game?
I did. I got Son's.
Oh, did you?
I was absolutely buzzing with. And I think I was buzzing with the draw because I've got a mate in Elgin who's, I've known since real, real young. And he's a massive Tottenham fan, like, annoyingly so, like, annoyingly a Tottenham fan. And he was actually down, he came down to visit me earlier in the season. And when Man United played Tottenham. And so obviously watching that game with him when Spurs won 6-1 or 6-2, I can't remember, was horrendous. But I was buzzing for him because he's such a big Tottenham fan, and you know, to give him, I'm going to give it to him whenever I see him next, and to give him that memento. I know how much it means to him. And but I actually had Lucas Moura message me on Instagram after the game, and because I'd asked for his shirt as well, thinking I need to hedge my bets if I don't get, you know. And he messaged me after the game, and fair play to him. He said, you know, I didn't see you after the game. I asked the physio if you could, if I could give you my shirt, and he said he didn't see you, and he says he's going to send me one. So if that arrives, fair play to him, because he, you know, he really didn't need to, and it's worked out perfectly that I'll get a shirt and so will my mate, and it'll be it'll be a nice memento for sure.
He sure he wasn't just trying to angle his way in to get some Tom Grennan tickets maybe in the future? Maybe
yeah, exactly. He wants Tom Grennan tickets and an Akin Fenwa shirt.
Yeah. But if you, I know obviously we're in lockdown just now, but if you, if you're looking for something to watch, I watched the documentary on Amazon Prime called Sensational, and it's a documentary about Son's upbringing and playing and moving from Germany to Spurs. It's an hour and a half, but it's honestly fascinating. For like 3 years, all he did was just do keepy uppies all day before he even learned to shoot.
I might get into that actually. Yeah. That's, yeah, like you say, there's always something that you need to watch or do. So
yeah, no, it's only an hour and a half. So I found it on Friday night, and I was honestly just blown away by these Koreans that they don't learn to shoot until 15 years old, so they don't hurt their knees. Just, and you think like in Scotland, everyone's just running around chasing the same ball, trying to score.
Football's as high as a gun. Slide tackling trees and that, just getting
exactly.
I just find he's like, he's like football's nice man. Like he, everyone likes him, and I think that's why everyone loves seeing him do so well. Is because he's just such, he seems like such a nice guy. And playing against him only for however long, I can back that up and say he was he wasn't laughing and joking when we were drawing, but when they were winning, he was laughing and joking. But no, he does. He seems really humble and just an all-round good guy.
Yeah, and he says, obviously, being you're in the Championship, there's Aberdeen connection in the Championship, not just yourself, but Sam Cosgrove, like you touched on there, joining Birmingham, who you play tomorrow. We're obviously recording this on transfer deadline day, but there's other Aberdeen players, Scott McKenna, Graham Sinead. Do you ever have a chance to, well, you actually play Scott McKenna at the weekend.
Yeah.
Do you ever have like a chance to speak to them and like reminisce about times at Aberdeen? Maybe more so Scott, from because obviously he's kind of come through the academy.
Yeah, I did. I didn't really know Graham Shinn. I only know him as a fan, essentially, because he's captain fantastic. But he's I actually played against Nottingham Forest early in the season. Scott played, and it was good to just have a laugh and a joke, because he's a few years younger, but I remembered him from youth days when, you know, you'd see younger players and stuff, and he was always a fair size, so he kind of stuck out. But he it's nice to sort of, you know, reminisce. And I've played against Clarky Robertson earlier in the season as well, and it's good to sort of, because I think you hold a certain bond when you come through at the same place, even when you're from the same place growing up, you know, not necessarily through football. Like even if you're you all grow up in Aberdeen, it's, you know, you're you tend to be brought up the same way, same things you laugh about and stuff, and it's a home feeling, which I don't, you know, you never get being down here all the time. So it's always good to see familiar faces and hear the accent, which is the main thing. It's nice to hear the accent again, which is nice. But yeah, like you said there with Sam Cosgrove as well, I'll just be, and it was funny, I actually played against Jaden Stockley a few times, and I just always shouted to our defenders, like, watch, he throws his elbows everywhere. And it's because I just always remember him, you know, getting sent off for elbowing people. And,
realigning Kieran Tierney's jaw as well in the Scottish Cup final.
Yeah, exactly. So, but no, it is, it's good. And like you said there with Sam Cosgrove, it'll be, you know, an interesting one to see if he features tomorrow night, making his debut maybe for Birmingham. And it'll be interesting to see him up close and personal, because, you know, I got asked a lot about the differences in, between Scottish football and English football, and I always kind of say I'd never played enough to really be able to give an honest opinion. We've got Daryl Horgan, who we signed from Hibs in the summer, and he played 2 years at Hibs, so he, you know, he gives a better analogy than I do, and Ikpeazu kind of the same sometimes. It is always good to see familiar faces. And even if I never played with them, I still feel like familiar faces, because it's Aberdeen, which is nice.
Yeah. Well, no, Jack, you know, we're coming to the end of the interview, and we really appreciate you taking out the time of your day to speak to both me and Calum. I think, Calum, you'll agree, it's been a pleasure.
It's been a very, very welcome sort of, I suppose, in a way, distraction to all the stuff that's going on right now. It's just nice to have a little chat and speak about Tom Grennan.
Yeah. And you know, it's transfer deadline day. We're disappointed your phone's not rang from Dave Cormack yet.
Yes, I know. Oh, that's McInnes phoning me now, actually.
But, you know, speaking of, you know, transfers and your time down in England, you said it's been 8 years there. What do you think the future holds for you, Jack? Do you see yourself down in England for more years to come? Or you say, you know, you've still got a bit of home feeling. Would you like to come back to Scotland eventually?
Yeah, I mean, it's always, like, I don't know, to be honest. It's, I think for... deep down, there's only so long you can go without seeing family and friends, and you know, especially when you start to, you know, have kids and things like that, you want to be closer to family. And I am very settled here at Wickham, and you know, I've got a contract for another 2 years. You know, the manager's speaking about another one, and I think they are a club that look to the future and like to get that base of a nucleus of players and they want to build around, and luckily I'm one of them. And you know, you want to go where you feel wanted and where you want to play. And so I'm settled here for the time being, but you know, it's obviously something that I would never, ever say no to. I'd never say never, because you just don't know what's going to happen in your life or in football. And it's a nice feeling, you know, it's a nice thought. Sorry. Hopefully, you know, you get to put on that shirt again. It would be nice. I'm not gonna lie. It would be a nice feeling, just not for me, but for family as well. And you know, it would be just to be in Scotland in general would definitely be nice to finally be close to friends and family for the first time in 8 or 10 years. You know, at 10 years it would be at the end of my contract, which is insane. Mm-hmm. You know, people say careers fly back quickly, but they don't have. Like, honestly, it's just flown by. And but yeah, who knows what the future holds, and we'll wait and see.
And you've fairly crammed a lot into your career so far, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more to cram in the future.
Yeah, here's hoping. Yeah, I've been very fortunate, I think, to have had the highs I've had, you know, mixed in with some lows, and yeah, if I have half the highs that I've already had, I'll be doing okay. So yeah, here's hoping for more Wembley trips and FA Cup goals. That would go down nicely.
Yeah. Well, Jack, from myself, just thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
No, nice one, lad. Thank you very much for having me again. Cheers.